Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. A little bit later in the show, I'll be joined by fellow MMQBer Kalen Kaler, and the two of us will take you through the Sunday afternoon games. Kalen wrote a little bit about the Bears kicker search this summer, and you know that might come up on this show. But first, I'm going to tell you about how the Packers got it done in Kansas City, and they needed every bit of this because the Mahomes-less, Matt Moore-led Chiefs gave them everything they could handle. There are a couple of things that made the difference in this one. The first, there was a drive that resulted in a mere field goal. It was the only points of the third quarter, but it was a 15-play drive, lasted 8 minutes and 33 seconds, and the Chiefs' defense, they weren't quite the same after that, but the Packers had a plan. They had a plan in this one. They took advantage of the Chiefs the same way a lot of people have taken advantage of the Chiefs over the years, and they kind of showed you how you win a game without your best weapon, and in Green Bay's case, that is Davante Adams. They deployed versatile players in a way that exploited mismatches. And the way you do that with the Chiefs is you put your running backs up against their linebackers in the passing game. The Chiefs have been bad at linebacker for a long time. You saw Aaron Jones feast on soft coverage on an early 17-yard catch. Later on, he split out wide and toasted Anthony Hitchens on that little sluggo that went for 50 yards and set up another score. Jones lined up as a receiver later and turned a perfectly executed screen into a 67-yard TD. And it was kind of fitting that at the end, when the Packers needed to convert that 3rd and 5 to seal the game, if they don't get it, they have to punt it, and maybe the Chiefs have the chance. What do? Jones splits out wide. Linebacker Ben Neiman on a 3rd and 5 is giving him about a 10-yard cushion. It was an absolute layup. Rodgers to Jones. Jones steps out of bounds. The game is over right there. There was also this game's lone turnover. And look, turnover battles often get overrated, and not all giveaways are created equal. A lot of them are born out of the necessary aggressiveness that you need to have if you're going to win football games in 2019. But LeSean McCoy, who, I mean, throughout his career, he has basically been infamous for carrying the ball like he's doing a shot-for-shot remake of that Ace Ventura package delivery scene. He gave one away between the tackles. It was right after that 15-play drive. He went right through traffic with the ball. Way too loose, far looser than you can ever run with it in an NFL game. It ends up on the ground. The Packers pounce in it. All of a sudden, one play after that 15-play drive that ended the field goal, the Chiefs are heading back onto the field with their tired defense. The Packers were in the end zone 5 plays later. And the way that touchdown drive ended, that was kind of the final factor in this game. Aaron Rodgers doing an Aaron Rodgers thing. Chris Collinsworth made the comment after Rodgers' sidearm fall-away flip fell perfectly to Jamal Williams in the corner of the end zone for a touchdown. It was a pass that had no right happening. Collinsworth said the game was like watching two boxers throwing haymakers. That's not quite what it was like. It was more like two boxers who were kind of masterfully and skillfully working each other and trading blows, and then suddenly in like round 8, one of the boxers climbs up to the top of the ropes and launches himself Chavo Guerrero style into a wicked flying right cross that knocks his opponent down and changes the entire fight. That's not a perfect metaphor because I don't think the Queensberry rules would allow it, but you kind of get what I'm saying. You can do everything right against the Packers. Chiefs had him on 3rd and goal. They got the pressure. Rodgers is falling away. It looks like a throwaway. And then all of a sudden, he just drops it in. He does things that are unexpected and, frankly, at times like that, otherworldly. And that's how the Packers end up taking the day. This one's going to be a tough one for the Chiefs to swallow. They had just the right amount of smoke and mirrors to make it work for Matt Moore. And they went toe-to-toe with Green Bay. This is their second Sunday night home game loss, and they are now 1-3 at Arrowhead this season. But the good news is they're up a game and a half in the division. There's a good chance Patrick Mahomes is coming back sooner than any of us thought he would. And even if he's not, it looks like they're going to be fine with Matt Moore under center, and they're still clearly the class of the AFC West. All right, we have lots to talk about. All the people who played football before the sun went down on Sunday. the Bears' problems related to kickers and non-kickers, the 49ers' dominance of the Panthers, just how bad the Browns should be feeling, and a whole lot more. Kalen Kaler is going to join me to break it all down, and I hope you will join us too. All right, welcome back. I'm now joined by Kalen Kaler, my personal friend, to go over all the afternoon games. And look, we made this schedule, this rotation, long ago, and you were going to be on this particular night, Kalen, but we kind of found the right one with what happened with the Bears' kicking situation today.
We definitely did. It's totally fate, because I wrote about their long saga of finding that kicker, finding the guy who is going to right all the wrongs that Cody Parkey committed last season. And they did find that guy. And then this week, he doinks one field goal. I think it was the 33-yarder earlier in the game. And then he has the game-winning chance, Eddie Pinheiro, 41-yarder, should be an easy shot, hits it wide left, and the Bears lose by 1 point. In a game that they really deserved to lose to begin with. So it's kind of, it's fitting for them. It's just fitting. It's all fitting.
This was chillingly similar to the loss last January against the Eagles, except, of course, this one came against a really bad Chargers team at a time when the Bears were 3-3. And look, it was similar for a number of reasons. One, obviously, the late miss by Pinheiro. Number two, Mitchell Trubisky plays just unwatchably bad football for 58 minutes, and then they go into the two-minute hurry-up when they need points late. They were trailing, of course, 17-16, and then they get the ball back. No timeouts left. They start this drive on their own 35 with a minute 33 to go, and Mitch just takes them right down the field, just like he did last January, and sets up this game-winning field goal attempt, and it all goes wrong from there. And I guess the big controversy with the last drive specifically was the Bears slowed down. They had 43 seconds, and they moved the ball down to the Chargers 21, and they sort of slowed it down and took a knee and then ended up running the clock down instead of trying to get more yardage to set up this last-second field goal attempt. And it just kind of goes to show, Matt Nagy said after the game, you know, well, what if we fumble there? What if we take a sack there? And you know, you would say with most teams, like, you can't think that way, but and statistically you can't think that way, but I guess I do kind of understand the instinct there, considering what's going on with his quarterback.
I totally understand it, and he was trying to, like Nagy said, you know, it's not about his lack of faith in the offense. He made that very clear during his post-game press conference, but it has to be about his lack of faith in the offense, because I mean, if you were to run the stats, like you just said, I mean, the chances of your kicker who already missed a field goal in this game at a shorter distance than the one that he was attempting, it was windy there. I mean, the risk of missing a field goal, I would have to assume, is greater than the risk of fumbling or turning the ball over somehow in that situation. So I do think it speaks directly to like what he thinks of his offense and how it's working. So for him to say that it had nothing to do with that, I thought was an interesting denial. But I think deep down, it does have something to do with what he thinks of his quarterback and what he thinks of this offense. But it is hilarious because Mitch is always a different quarterback, like in the final 2 minutes when he's already lost the game for his team. And that's the argument that pro Trubisky, you know, fans or just supporters in general always make about him is like, yeah, but didn't you see that clutch throw that he made with like 40 seconds left in the game? And it's like, yeah, that existed. You're right. That was good. It existed. It was real. It happened. But like, it shouldn't need to happen because he should be playing better for the 3.5 other quarters.
Exactly. The issue is the first 58.5 minutes of every game. And if you played better there, you had like a 3-touchdown lead and you don't have to worry about Eddie Pinheiro trying to make this kick. Same thing last January. If you put up some points against an Eagles defense that was not having a good day, not to relitigate that game. And I'm sorry, Bears fans. I'm sorry we have to go through this again. But not to relitigate that game. But if the offense wasn't so atrocious for most of that game, they would have won the game easily. You don't have to worry about your field goal kicker coming out. The defense is still playing at maybe not a historically high level this year, but a very high level, certainly a level that should have them in the playoff hunt. But it's just one of those things. It bothered me when they sort of scapegoated the kicker as like, this was our one problem last year. And it's like, well, no, you guys had a really good defense. Your offense, you know, has some work to do. And, you know, we all waited to see what they rolled out this year, and somehow it's worse, and it's getting worse. And I'm not sure how they dig themselves out of this, except for maybe, like we discussed, do you basically run the hurry up all the time? Then Trubisky isn't, I don't know if the issue is he thinks too much during the game or it seems to be very much in his head because he wasn't this dreadfully inaccurate at any point earlier in his career, even going back to North Carolina. But maybe you just run that all the time and you just say, sorry, defense, you might be out there for 38 minutes some weeks, but we're gonna try and figure this out.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. I think what's the harm in trying that? Because nothing else seems to be working at this point. And the thing that I keep coming back to that I don't know if I know the answer to or if there is an answer to yet is it's sort of like the chicken or the egg question. It's like Nat Nagy is supposed to be great at developing young quarterbacks. He's supposed to be an offensive guru. So it's like, was Mitch always going to be like this? Is this the quarterback that he is, or is Matt Nagy, like, how much of this do we put on Matt Nagy is kind of the question here. And I think that's really interesting, and it'll be interesting to see going forward, like, what the Bears do. Like, are they going to sign a veteran quarterback who is already developed and, you know, there's less of the, you know, helping them get the skills to be ready to be an NFL starter involved. So someone who's more established, or do they take another young quarterback again because they believe Nagy still has the skill set to do that? I think that will be interesting to see what they do there going forward, because it's hard to tell if this is Mitch or, you know, how much of this is Coach Nagy not being able to get the most out of Mitch situation. So that's my question.
There's no way of knowing, but it's like he has regressed so rapidly and he's gone off such a steep cliff at this point. You can't feel good about the coaching and how it's gone to this point. And yeah, it's like we're getting ahead of ourselves. Chicago's sitting at 3-4. They're 2.5 games out of playoff spot. This was the soft portion of their schedule. They have a really easy first half schedule, and then it gets really tough in the second half. They only have one team left with a current losing record left on their schedule at this point. They'll play the Giants. Everyone else is 500 or better, and some of those teams are good 500 teams, like teams like Philadelphia, things like that. So you hate to say, like, okay, it's not quite Halloween and we're already giving up on the season with this team, but you kind of look forward a little bit, and as far as I'm concerned, it's got to be a veteran quarterback next year. And I'd be kind of interested to see Marcus Mariota reunited with Mark Helfrich there, but I don't think that's a particularly good idea. I think the coach fit is appealing, and that's about it. I don't know, though. I think they gotta see what they can shake out as far as a veteran signal caller goes, and hope you get basically what Chase Daniel had been giving them, which isn't particularly good, but if you get someone more talented than Chase Daniel, then you might have a good enough offense at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, if there's one thing we've learned, it's that this franchise and their fan base will probably really take this loss in stride, considering how it went down. So
totally. There was one positive thing. Khalil Mack did talk to the media today. He had been avoiding his duties as an NFL player to speak to the media since like October 1st, I think it was. And so he did talk after this loss. After all the previous losses, he had left the locker room well before the reporters were allowed in. So if we are looking for a positive to glean from this heartbreaking loss for Bears fans and the kicker drama cycle starting anew, this kicker scapegoat cycle, as we should really put it, that would probably be the upside. That and the fact that Matt Nagy actually did call a lot of run plays, which was very different than the way he's handled the rest of the season, and probably a good sign.
He did run the ball. Yeah, David Montgomery had the one long run, and he did go over 100 yards the first time in his career, which is a milestone. Kudos to him. I don't think Bears fans are going to feel any better about talking to the media. I don't think that's going to soothe their wounds at all.
That's right.
Let's find a sadder fan base at this point. Let's go Patriots-Browns. We'll start on the Patriots side of it. It was another win, just like basically every win they put up this year. It was a dominant defense, early takeaways. I don't know how much you can, you know, it was a wet day up in Foxborough. I don't know how much you can sort of look at it and say they forced two Nick Chubb fumbles. I mean, they did dislodge the ball, but I don't know if that's really part of your, I don't know, part of your game plan going into it. They also, Lawrence Guy just caught a little shovel pass that Baker Mayfield was throwing. Lawrence Guy was a beast in this one, by the way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, look, three takeaways, another defensive touchdown. This defense has more touchdowns than they have allowed this season. So, you know, Tom Brady's kind of right. He says they don't have an offensive identity, and they kind of don't, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as we've seen pretty much every season that the Patriots have been dominant, you know, the last decade or more, they kind of just become, they form an identity a little bit later than a lot of other teams do. Like, as the season progresses, they're sort of this growing and, like, evolving offense, especially on that side of the ball. So I think as the season continues, like, we're just kind of now reaching, like, that halfway mark. So I think as the season continues, like, they're going to find more of an offensive identity. But also, it's like the NFC is so much stronger than the AFC this season. Like, it's almost a little bit ridiculous. Like, so the Patriots, it honestly doesn't really matter at this point because they're still so much better than every other team that they're facing so far this year. So they can take a little bit more time to figure it out because they're not playing against the 49ers and the Packers and the Saints in the NFC. So I think, they're in a good spot, and I would not be concerned with a lack of offensive identity at this point.
I was going to say, they're sitting at 8-0. Everyone else in the AFC has at least two losses at this point. I don't know. There's not a whole lot else to say about this game. Stephon Gilmore was great again. You will, by the way, be able to read about him. Jenny Vrentis has a piece on Stephon Gilmore, basically owning his reputation, his well-earned reputation as football's best corner. That's coming out this week. The only thing I'd say on the Browns side, look, everyone's looked bad against the Patriots defense this year. You wish it was going better for Cleveland, but you can't read too much into this game. And the other thing is, they're not really out of it in the AFC. I said the same thing about the Jets last week, so maybe I should stop touting all these teams. Right. But look, the Browns are sitting at 2-5. There's gonna be, in all likelihood, like a 9-7 wild card team might sneak in. Browns have a very soft second half of the season schedule. They have a chance to start gathering wins here and sort of get back into it. I don't think they're going to get there, but they certainly have a chance to build something in the second half here.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, they have the Bengals twice, the Steelers twice. I mean, they're blessed to be in a division that, aside from the Ravens, there's not a whole lot happening there this season. So I definitely think there's plenty of opportunity for them to bounce back and actually start making the most of the hype that was made of them earlier this season and the talent level, which hasn't been seen in Cleveland in a long time. So I think there's definitely plenty of time. And I would think with like the strong personalities that they have there, like things are either going to like boil over in a negative way, or it could totally flip the other side and they could figure it out and just use all that energy there to bounce back. So I don't think the Browns are out of it quite yet.
Yeah, tough one coming up at Denver. Broncos are still, especially that defense, is still playing really well. But then they got a homestand. They still get the Dolphins this year. They've already been to Baltimore, so they host Baltimore in December. They have a chance to be in the conversation in December. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, especially because our guy, Prospect X, Drew Forbes, offensive lineman, he has been designated to return off of IR. He's back at practice. They'll decide if they want him, you know, in the next few days here. And the bar is very low, as we've discussed several times on that offensive line. So our guy, our rookie, he might see some action soon. We'll see.
I was going to say, that's better news for Browns fans than Khalil Mack talking to the media is for Bears fans. So we're getting better as we go on
that's
here.
Right.
We're finding things for everyone to be happy about.
That's right.
Let's go Saints Cardinals. Drew Brees is back. He made his return. Teddy Bridgewater did a fantastic job for them while Brees was out, and they're on the other side of this. And I mean, look, Brees was Brees in this game. I don't think it was a spectacular performance. It was certainly good. He knocked off a little bit of rust early, and went from there. But the story continues to be this Saints defense is just absolutely dominant. I mean, they held the Cardinals to 237 yards, that air raid offense. This was, once again, and you saw it while Bridgewater was in there, this was a defense-first team, basically just overwhelming an opponent.
Mm-hmm, definitely. The Saints are really good this year. I mean, they're going to go far, especially with that defense. And I think, you know, just how well they're doing without Alvin Kamara, too. Just the vast, like, different playmakers that they have on offense is really impressive, too, the way they use Taysom Hill, obviously. I think he had his third receiving touchdown in that game this season. So it's been really interesting to see the different ways that Sean Payton uses him. And I really think, like, I'm excited to see – this is not really about the Saints. It's kind of a tangent. But I'm excited to see, like, what happens with the quarterback market this offseason, because I think Teddy Bridgewater is going to have a lot of interest. And then you've got, obviously, Marcus Mariota. What happens to Jameis Winston? You could go down the line. There's going to be all these previous starters, kind of starting quarterbacks, who are going to be out there. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to them. And I'm very curious to see what happens to Teddy Bridgewater, because I think he showed a lot in the five games that he got to start for New Orleans this year.
I know. I kind of like the thought of Bridgewater just sort of being the heir apparent to Brees in New Orleans. But I was not in on him as a starter next year. And I thought he'd just be a guy who just sort of went around and had a nice career as a backup, and that would be that. He's look, the Chicago Bears love to have Teddy Bridgewater right now. I mean, there are a lot of teams that would like to have him in there. So that's going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
Let's go out to Santa Clara, where the 49ers just destroyed the Carolina Panthers. I don't know if the 49ers have everyone buying into them. Coming into this week, I think a lot of people were looking around saying, they haven't quite beaten anyone. They won a messy game in Washington last week. This was just utter dominance on both sides of the ball. I guess it starts with a pass rush. I think that's what you'd look at first, mostly because it was kind of non-existent last year. And they ruined Kyle Allen today. And not only in the pass rush, but like Nick Bosa just picked off a little dump off pass that Kyle Allen tried to throw, and just kind of that play. If you find that play of Nick Bosa just rushing the passer, jumping up, grabbing that pass and just like steamrolling Kyle Allen, that was like the metaphor for this entire game.
Yeah, 100%. And I think Richard Sherman would agree with you. And you know, every week it seems like he has a new quote being like, well, whatever you thought of us in the preseason, like keep thinking that. Like people aren't allowed to change their opinions as the season goes on. It's a very weird stance for him to be taking, but I guess I get it from the terms of like, us versus them kind of locker room mentality, sure. But he would definitely agree with you. I think this is definitely, to use the phrase, statement game. One of those where they showed exactly what they are. And like, even when their backups were in the game, they were still getting off to it was still just really impressive, and they were still completely dominant over the Panthers. And yeah, I think this will quiet all of the Kyle Allen over Cam Newton people out there on the internet voicing their opinions that, you know, the Panthers should move on from Cam Newton. I think this is sort of an example of why it's a little premature to say that, and you need to calm down a little bit with that opinion. And yeah, I think like looking forward for the 49ers, I was looking at their schedule going forward, and they host the Packers on, I think it's November 24th. I don't know what week that is, a few weeks from now. And that's going to be an interesting game. Like, I'm kind of really looking forward to that game because I feel like that's two of the really strong, most impressive teams so far in the NFC. And I think that will be a really interesting game later on.
And you get the old Mike Shanahan disciples there, Kyle. Exactly. And Matt LaFleur.
A little reunion.
Each other in that one.
A little reunion out there.
I should mention, you know, the 49ers collected all those running backs. Like, they signed Tevin Coleman, and it was kind of like, what are you going to do with all those running backs, Kyle Shanahan? And then you kind of saw it today that, like, it's the fact that these guys are all fast and they're rotating in, they're all fresh. They're doing a lot of misdirection stuff off of it. I mean, Luke Kuechly does not get confused often, but they had Luke Kuechly just running in circles today. Debo Samuel mixes in there on not only some sort of gadgety catch and run stuff, but some fly sweep, some end around type stuff. So they end up at 38 rushing attempts. That includes the three kneel downs. So really 35 rushing attempts for 235 and five touchdowns in this one. So the funny thing about this is, a year ago, we were all looking at Jimmy Garoppolo and saying, like, oh, Jimmy Garoppolo, he's the new franchise quarterback. Right, he's going to take the 49ers to the next level. He's probably the last question mark left on this team at this point. And he hasn't necessarily been bad. He's been a little erratic. Ball placement has been great this year. And a day like this, he didn't have to do a whole lot.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, like, the main storyline from them this offseason, or one of the main storylines, was, what is he going to be like coming back from his ACL injury? You know, is he going to be good? And it's like, that's kind of not really been as much of an impact on their season as you would think. You know, the quarterback, he's the leading guy. It's going to be all about him. But you're exactly right. Like, this kind of goes back to why, you know, Shanahan is such a good coach. Like, he's able to use every player that he has on his roster, you know, in a way that works, in a way that it's not all on Jimmy Garoppolo to be the end-all, be-all success for this team. So I think that's really interesting. And, you know, he's really shown why he's a really good coach so far this season. I think it's been a really impressive coaching job by him.
I know. It's tough to beat the Shanahan and Robert Saleh combination out there in San Francisco right now. And I'm with you, KK. I think it was tough to bench Kyle Allen when he had the perfect record. I think there is a certain amount of PR that plays into that. Mm-hmm. Cam also, I mean, who knows what Cam's health situation is exactly at this point, but it's clear. If you can get like 90% Cam Newton back in the lineup, put Cam back in the lineup.
Definitely.
I mean, they would have won the four games with Cam in there. It was a lot of defense and rushing attack. Kyle Allen did a fine job keeping the trains running on schedule, but it's Cam's team and it's Cam's time once he's healthy. And the Panthers are still really interesting going into the second half here. Let's go Raiders Texans. Two big storylines in this one. A momentary storyline. Deshaun Watson got kicked in the face, spun out of a sack, and went and threw the game-winning touchdown pass. It was just really freaking cool.
It was
an incredible play.
It was awesome. He was like basically blindfolded, essentially the equivalent of like cover one eye and now throw a touchdown pass.
His eye was like, I don't know if it was quite swollen shut. I guess we'll have to see in like the post game press conference footage. But he was not as handsome when he went out there for the for the final couple snaps there. So that was awesome. Look, they came from behind. Raiders were game again. It's so tough to figure out the Raiders. They always come out with a good script every game, and certainly they got better defensively than last week's kind of consistent meltdowns against the Packers. The other thing I wanted to mention before we get to the really big story in this game was Gerrion Conley, who was traded from the Raiders to the Texans, the former Raiders first-round pick, the cornerback. He did, you know, it's always tough to say who blew a coverage, but I think it's pretty clear he blew a coverage on Tyrell Williams' 46-yard touchdown in the third quarter, and it was kind of like, you know what? That was awfully thoughtful of Gerrion Comley. Yeah. He didn't play very well for the Raiders this year, and just sort of doing that net solid.
Yeah, help him out just a little bit more there.
It's sort of related to that. J.J. Watt, according to Rap Sheet, a possible torn pectoral muscle, which would probably knock him out for the season, which, one, it's a shame for J.J. Watt, but two, it's especially a shame because, you know, they moved on from Jadeveon Clowney. The pass rush is not quite what it was. And in the secondary, they've been running through these cornerbacks, and they're bad back there. And it's a bad combination to be bad in the defensive backfield and not have a pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you just mentioned, like, the pass rush is, you know, definitely helps out when you have not a very strong secondary. Like, that is what really helps those guys play better and help them affect the game. So, yeah, that's a little bit concerning for the Texans. And especially because, you know, this is a season where it seems like they are completely all in just based off of the trades they made right before the season started. So I think they view this as like their year and a year where they can really compete and they can win. And they still have a quarterback who is on his rookie contract. So it's affordable at the moment for them to do that, and they can manage it all. So it's hard not to look at this season. I don't know if you can say, oh, it's over for them now. If J.J. Watt doesn't come back, that's a stretch. But obviously, he has a big impact on this team. And without him, I think their chances are a little bit worse to really challenge in the league this season. So, yeah, it's depressing. And I think we looked it up. This would be his third time with a season-ending injury in the last 4 years, I believe. So that's just a bummer for him. And then you think, okay, well, you know, are we not to say he's going to pull an Andrew Luck and then retire because he's been injured for so long, but you have to wonder sometimes, like, you know, you have that many season ending injuries. I mean, what's the limit? How much longer are you going to keep going? So
he seems to me like a guy who will just play until he absolutely can't play.
He has
anymore,
to be wheeled off the field.
he's 30 years old. I mean, I don't know how much time is left in his career, but, it's a shame if the reports are in fact true that this one's going to knock him out. Let's go up to Buffalo. Eagles, Bills. Eagles just absolutely steamrolled the Bills in this one. This was encouraging for a number of reasons. Number one, they didn't need Carson Wentz to be Superman today. They got the ground game going against a really good Bills defense. 218 yards. They averaged 5.3 per carry. Jordan Howard went 11 for 55 in the fourth quarter. That was all really good. But look, I know Josh Allen's still a work in progress, but this is the first time all season the Eagles had their two starting cornerbacks, Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills, in the lineup. Fletcher Cox was outstanding in this one. It looked a lot more like the Eagles defense we thought we were going to get coming into the season. And I guess that's my way of saying, Kalen, that I am completely 2 feet back on the Eagles bandwagon at this point.
Yeah, and I think you should be. Like, again, as we were kind of talking about with the Browns, like, they're in a division, NFC East, where the Cowboys, that's their competition right now. Like, that's who they're going to be fighting with in that division. So they've really only got one team at the moment to worry about there. So I think there's definitely plenty of room and opportunity for them to bounce back from the rough start. And especially now that they have Darby and Mills back, I mean, that seemed to have a really big impact on this game. You could just tell the difference there. In a position group that they've really been struggling with this season. So I think that's really promising. And yeah, Fletcher Cox, after what was it? He had to pull a gun out because he had an intruder at his home last week. I think he was in the news for that.
did that happen? Yeah. I didn't see that.
Yes, he, like, and it was funny because, you know, he's very scary looking. Like, he's huge. So it's like, why would you... I mean, who in their right mind is going to try to rob him or, you know, invade his house? And if you saw him standing there, you know, run away. Whoever you are, get out of there immediately. So, yeah, he was great. So I think this Eagles team, let's go. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Oh my God. Fletcher Cox is gigantic, but not like in a funny way. He's not like, oh, there's a big fat guy or something. Like he is just every part of his body is like enlarged. Yes. It's like LeBron, except he's somehow like bigger.
Like in a
that would be terrifying.
Yeah, in a very intimidating way. Yes. 100%.
Yeah. Yep. Colts Broncos. Kalen, we have a happy kicker story for today.
Yay.
Adam Vinatieri just messing with everyone, just building up the drama here. He misses, really missed a 45-yarder early in this one against the Broncos, and then he missed a PAT when the Colts had pulled to within 13-12, which meant the Colts had to come back. And Jacoby Brissett delivered. It was sort of a rough one in this one. That Broncos defense, like you said, they're still playing hard. They're still good. The offense is a different story, but their defense still playing hard, still good. They ended up, Colts got the ball back at their own 11 with a minute 48 to go. Jacoby Brissett made one of the plays of the year, escaping from Von Miller and finding T.Y. Hilton downfield. That started that drive, and then it ends with Vinatieri kicking a 51-yarder after such a bad day before that.
Right. It's so funny because I saw that he got the game ball, and I'm kind of like, he just did that on purpose so he could get the game ball at the end. He just wanted another one to add to his collection.
He's just bored out there. He also had a 55-yarder at the end of the first half. So
he just needs a little extra challenge, you know, when you're 46 and even playing for 23 seasons or what is it, 24 seasons. You got to do some things to keep yourself entertained out there. The one thing I thought was interesting about this game, though, I don't know if you saw Joe Flacco's quotes from his post-game press conference, but he usually doesn't make any waves. He's very boring during his media availability. But today he was clearly frustrated with the offense and at the end of that game, sort of like the lack of aggressive play calling. On 3rd and 5, there were like 2 minutes left in the game. 3rd and 5, they ran the ball and Phillip Lindsay was stuffed and then they punted on 4th down.
Yep.
So, you know, Flacco openly questioned the lack of aggression and kind of said, like, it seems like we're afraid to lose the game is what his quote was. And I thought that was interesting because he's usually not one to speak up, but he seems very not pleased with the direction of the offense and sort of the lack of let's go win this one, kind of like just playing to keep the lead, sort of passive playing. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I agree with that overall, but I don't know. I don't know if that this Broncos offense, especially the way the defense played today, if you're ever gonna lean conservative, I guess this is the team to do it with. They threw they had a 3rd and 8 late, trying to keep a drive alive, where they threw a little receiver screen to Noah Fant that went nowhere, and then like you said, they got stuffed on a run on 3rd and 5 mm-hmm. to create that last one. And I don't know, I guess I could see it. You probably should have put the ball in the air for Flacco at that point, but that defense was great all day. They had to stop the Colts from going, you know, 50 something yards, and they couldn't do it. Kalen, it's time for the lightning-ish round.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
And I know I don't want to go too quickly, so I don't know if you just want to start with like a 20-minute moment of silence before we start talking, but we'll see how it feels.
Yeah,
we'll see how it feels.
Good.
We're starting Lions-Giants here. I continue to, campaign for Matthew Stafford as MVP. I think he's right firmly in the conversation. I don't know if it would be Stafford, Wilson, or Watson at this point, but Stafford was spectacular again in this one, and they finally threw the knockout punch in one of these games, which the Lions haven't been able to do, and that's why they're sitting there at 500 instead of like 2 games over .500 right now.
It's totally insane to me that they have the record that they do. Because, yeah, I mean, that Monday night game in Green Bay is still horrible that they didn't win that game. Like, that was their game. The officials gave it to the Packers, essentially, with the questionable call. So they're a team that's much better, I think, than what their record reflects. And like you said, Matt Stafford is like, you know, I think he's having the best start to a season that he's ever had for himself. So it's like a historic season for him as an NFL starting quarterback. And I loved the double pass kind of flea flicker type play that they did, because they did one of those at Green Bay 2 weeks ago as well. And it also went for like, that one was like 60 yards, I think. And it was Kenny Golladay both times. And that one was so exciting. And it was like the first play. I can't remember if it was the first play of that game or if it was the first play of the second drive. But either way, it was like early in the game. They were like setting the tone. Like, look what we're going to do. Stafford has found the deep ball again. And consistently, he's like been so good with these like deep passes that just, I think, kind of just throw a defense off. Like, they're not ready for that. Although now they have that on film twice, so who knows how many more times they're going to call a play like that going forward. I think the opportunities are probably pretty limited now that they've sort of shown that similar look. They were a little bit different play designs. I went back and watched both of them, and they're a little bit different. But, you know, both Kenny Golladay and this one went for a touchdown, and it was just – it's awesome. I love seeing, like, different plays like that and just the confidence that I think that offense has and that – Stafford is clearly playing with this year. It's really fun to watch them. And yeah, I think the NFC North, I mean, I wrote about this a couple weeks ago, but I think the NFC North is really interesting because the Bears have clearly become the worst team. And I think that's unquestionable that they have taken that title of like, we're not doing anything further this season. And I think their loss today sort of shows how the rest of their season is going to go. But the Lions, I could see, you know, going on a win streak and getting up there with the Packers and the Vikings, who are both also very talented and strong teams. So I don't know. Somebody's going to deserve to be a playoff team in the NFC North and is not going to be there. So it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out.
I know. There are a lot of AFC divisions the Lions would probably win this year.
Right? Yeah. Many of them.
All right, if you liked that fourth quarter trick play that the Lions ran there, you're going to love what happened in the Rams-Bengals game in London, the double reverse flea flicker. And I'm sure this has happened at some point in the history of football, but Cooper Kupp was the first one to get that ball and also caught the touchdown on it, and it was probably the coolest thing that happened today.
It was so good. It was by far the best play of the day, like no contest. And I don't even know how you begin to defend that as a defense. It would just be so disorienting. Like, there he was, but now there he is. And he has the ball again. And then, but it also went back to Goff. And what is going on? So it was great. Loved it.
Poor B.W. Webb in the defensive backfield for the Bengals just kind of just fell down for like no particular reason. His mind was just too blown by what transpired. The rest of this game, it was a 24-10 victory for the Rams, and they rolled up 470 yards of offense. Some of them obviously in more creative ways as they try and sort of find their way after. I mean, look, they're not who they were last year, which is fine. They can still be good. We'll see.
That's right. And, the Bengals actually were able to run the ball a little bit. So that was a little bit of a bonus, I guess, if you want to find a bright side for Bengals fans, since that offensive line is really not great over there. So the fact that Joe Mixon was able to, what did he have, 66 yards? I mean,
yeah,
that's more than I thought they would have.
It's Hall of Fame caliber behind that Bengals offensive line.
Right, honestly. Means a lot more than what 66 yards would mean behind any other team. So,
Titans Bucks. This was I don't know. I feel like I've reached my quota of like running down bad officiating moments this year. Kalen, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, sure, I'll take it. So it was the Titans who faked a field goal, and the was it the punter who ended up with the ball?
The holder. Yeah.
The holder. Yep. He ended up with the ball. And as he's getting tackled, it was clearly a fumble. And the Buccaneers ran it back for what would have been the go-ahead score to win that game for them. It happened late in the game. And the officials had whistled it dead before. So there was no ability to review that play to determine, was it a fumble? Should this be honored? Can we change it? Nope, they had whistled the play dead. So it was sort of a non-issue at that point, and there was nothing the Buccaneers could really do about it. So Buccaneers fans are mad about that one. And yeah, I mean, this is just another, it was the weekly special of officiating fails. Yeah, and I just think it's just getting, I mean, we can expect a few of these every week this year, as we've already seen for the first 8 weeks of the season. Yeah, and I'm sure, well, we'll see, but, you know, there were a couple players fined last week for their comments about officiating, and I think it was Baker Mayfield and I think Clay Matthews last week who took the fines for coming out and saying the truth about NFL officiating. So we'll see if anybody gets fined this week. But like anecdotally speaking, I was talking to Packers players and a couple Bears players just about the officiating, and they kind of all nicely but definitely agreed. They said it in the nicest way possible, but they agreed, like, yeah, there's been some bad decisions made out there, you know? Like, I asked Kyle Fuller, who had been watching, like, that Monday night game against Detroit, the Bears cornerback. I was like, were you watching that game? Like, what did you think? And he was like, yeah, those were really bad calls. Those were just, it was just bad. And it's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's really not a lot of arguing that you can do anymore. It's just like, yeah, that was wrong. And, you know, Riveron's, when he goes on Twitter to explain the decisions, it just doesn't even make sense. Like, his explanations are like non-explanations, but like, I can't even describe it. They just don't help at all. And they just make you even more confused about what you just watched.
Yeah. I mean, this one was just an inadvertent whistle. I don't, you know, you can't really do anything about it on replay because, right, you know, some goober has blown the play dead for no particular reason.
Right.
And that's the way it goes. And the Bucks are already being vocal about it. So I'm sure there will be some fines coming out of this week.
Let's go.
And also, I'm sure, an apology from the officiating folks at Park Avenue going out to Tampa Bay.
Right.
Jaguars and Jets, my New York Jets, who I'm still waiting for them to take off this season. And they have like the weakest schedule in the history of organized sports coming up in the second half of the year.
Truly.
I thought maybe they could steal one down in Jacksonville. They did not. They can't block, and Sam Darnold is just he looked really good early on when they had the script going.
Yep.
And as the game went on and he's getting knocked around and the Jaguars are mixing in some blitzes, and I guess all you have to do is blitz the Jets and they just completely freak out and like all the linemen just sort of crumble into a fetal position and that's how the play ends. But
yeah,
they got some things to work on at practice this week.
Yeah, just a couple. My favorite part about this game was not even anything that really happened on the field, but the Jacksonville Jaguars mascot, which is named Jackson DeVille, which is, I mean, that's just a terrible, it's just a horrible mascot name, but that's a whole other issue. We can go there later. It's for another podcast, but they dressed him up. They dressed him up in a, for Halloween in like a sheet, like a ghost, because of Sam Darnold's comments about seeing ghosts last week. So that was pretty funny. That was like a pretty good troll.
Okay.
I appreciated that. I thought that was good. So, yeah, I mean, he was probably seeing ghosts again this week, I think it would be safe to say. Though he'll probably never use that phrase again after the outcry among the Jets organization for unknown. I don't understand the anger there. But again, that's for another podcast.
You said, you broadcast what he said on the microphone we said you could put on him.
Yeah, right.
How dare you?
And like a phrase that like every quarterback, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, literally any Hall of Famer, I swear to God, if you went up to Troy Aikman, if you went up to any single quarterback and you said, have you ever said that at any point in your career? They would say, yes, like many times in my career.
Mm-hmm.
It's common. He didn't swear. He didn't say something like prejudiced or racist. I mean, who cares? He just expressed something that a quarterback regularly expresses. I don't understand.
Only the Jets. Only turns into this with the Jets is I think,
right,
what we all learned. Last game of the week, Seahawks, Falcons. Matt Schaub's show down there in Atlanta, and I thought it was very nice of Pete Carroll, you know, coaching against his old colleague in Dan Quinn, and the Seahawks jump out 24-0, and then just sort of like they just stopped trying to score points after that.
They just disappeared second half.
Yeah.
I don't know where they went.
It, They had four possessions in the second half, went three and out three of those times, and the Falcons brought it to within 27-20, which was doesn't look so bad if you didn't actually watch the game. I don't think there's anything else to say about the Falcons at this point. I think they do need a change there, because it's just getting worse. That's a wrap for week 8 here. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Kalen Kaler and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave us a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.